slot and shoots. He scores. Quinn Hughes in overtime, and he's the leading rookie scorer in the NHL.
Your Vancouver Canucks live here.
Here's Horvat with a partial break down the left wing. Bo Horvat, he scores. The captain does it again.
This is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
What is up? Happy Thursday to you. Thank you for making us part of your day. It is Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss. Myself, Bick Nazar, the Boss, Craig McEwen. Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and start the season by saving thousands on Kubota skid steers and excavators. Avenue Machinery. Use the internet to find them. C-Mac, have you got the putting mat out and you're just practicing following along with the Masters?
Yeah, I love watching this tournament, and again, humble brag, having been there to just understand.
Yeah, we know. Course. We know.
Yes, the course, the layout, all that sort of stuff. And again, as I mentioned before, what doesn't translate on the TV is the up and down or the undulation. There's some steep hills. Those greens are nasty and tricky. And I mean, what we're seeing with the scores so far to start, that the course is a tough track to navigate and score well on. And it's one of those things you look forward to every April is watching the Masters.
You just like working in undulation. That's 2 days in a row there.
You're Isn't just, that nice? Yes. It's like stave off elimination, or undulation. Yeah, those words that, you know, you were working in the great analogy yesterday with pebbles, stones, and sand, and, you know, going really deep on us. So when you can kind of expand your horizons and use different words and show people that you're not just a sports meathead, it's pretty good.
You're on the DiMaggio hit streak with 2 days in a row with undulation. We'll see how long it goes on. See if it translates all the way through Monday after the Masters is done. A quick update on the leaderboard, not the actual Masters leaderboard, Dan Riccio's Masters pool. Big shout out to Mike G leading the way right now, and Josh Elliott-Wolf trailing him very close. Our guy, the writer, in second place on the Masters leaderboard. So we'll keep an eye on that throughout the day on day one of the Masters. But it is Canuck Central, Bick Nazar and Craig McEwen here. You heard in the update from Adam Forsyth, reports are, and we'll wait for the official COVID list, but reports are no positive tests for the Vancouver Canucks today, which is obviously a very encouraging and the first step to, you know, getting back on the ice and the first step towards progress for both the Vancouver Canucks, the players themselves for their own health, and also the NHL plotting this out of how to deal with this stoppage for one particular team. Emily Kaplan just putting out on her Twitter account, at Emily M. Kaplan, NHL is aiming for the team to get back on the ice by the end of next week, though the situation is still fluid. Scheduling games will depend on how players recover. The league is still hopeful to play 56 games this season. That's similar to the report we heard yesterday from Jaron Dreger, but just another update is, you know, with the COVID situation, things can change day to day, let alone hour to hour. That's the latest as we stand here at 1:04 p.m.
Comforting, I guess, on a number of levels in the fact that if this holds true now for the next few days where there's no more positives, that somehow, some way, they've cut the virus off and have contained it. Just realizing the sacrifices that everyone in that organization is going through and making sure that it doesn't go any further into other players. There's only a handful of them left, to be honest with you, but their family members and living in basements, staying in hotels so that they're away from their families to keep everyone safe and healthy. So, yeah, this is good news, and I guess hopefully the beginning of the end of the COVID problems, and then the start, though, of trying to figure out, as you just mentioned there, is it 56 games? When can they get back on the ice and start practicing? When could they actually be physically fit enough to play another hockey game? All things to be determined in the days and hopefully not weeks to come. But looking at it, nice to see that list has got no new additions here.
Well, when you're dealing with this problem, like any bit of good news. Like I don't want to overrate it because it's the first day of good news, but you just, man, this franchise needed something in dealing with this issue of, hey, whew, no new positives today. Like now you can start charting your course towards recovery. Now steps need to be taken. You still need to maintain vigilance and all that sort of stuff. But hey, it's great to see that today, not going to see a new name on the list. No new positives. That's a massive step forward to overcoming something that I'm sure has derailed a lot of their plans and a lot of their options around a busy time in the NHL too, because the deadline just days away.
Yeah, you know, it does, and hockey's a great escape for all of us, and that's why we love sports. It takes us away from the normal everyday routine and brings us into a state of fandom or a state of I'm going to sit back and just enjoy this. And that's so hard. And when life takes over and something this serious, it's incredibly tough to, you know, kind of park those fan thoughts or those ideas of what are the Canucks going to do with the deadline? What are they going to do here down the stretch? Can they make the playoffs? But, you know, as the end hopefully comes here on this COVID front, we can start to get back to normal and start to look at these things a little bit more. Interesting, you see a tweet from Michael Bublé on Twitter, you know, saying obviously life is more important than the sports of hockey, but I do miss the Canucks like the deserts miss the rain, he says. So many huggies, smoochies, and kisses. Get well soon. God bless you and your families. And then he tags Brock Besser in it. So, yeah, there's a biggest Canuck fan there is, Michael Bublé, even talking about how much he misses it, but realizing that things have been a little more important than wins and losses, penalty kills, power plays, save percentages the last little bit. But we're hopefully getting back to that now and getting back to the meat of the matter and that fandom and that ability for us to debate and go at each other why they should do this or why they should keep this player and what are they going to do on the deadline. Those are the things that we do enjoy in this job, and that's why we do talk radio and talk about sports. But we do have to be respectful, and this is obviously great news today that there wasn't anyone else put on that list.
We'd all love nothing more to sit back, grab a beer, or if you're Brendan Batchelor, grab a pop and watch a game. And yeah, certainly good news today. But as you mentioned, we all love talking about the things that can happen, whether it transactionally or on the ice, whatever it is. We're in a transaction period for the Vancouver Canucks, obviously with no games going on. And, you know, Tanner Pearson's been brought up a lot, and I don't necessarily want to touch just on Tanner Pearson, but, you know, last night on the People Show, Riccio sat and ran deep. They welcomed Patrick Johnson, and you know they were talking about the issues of Tanner Pearson and the benefits and the dangers of it all. And you know, PJ said something that struck me, and you know, going back and listening to a couple of things, I wanted to bring this up because there's a trait that I think we all like, and for good reason too, because you look for it in your closest friends, you want it in your family, and you definitely hope your employer has some. And that trait is loyalty, right? Like, it's nice to know that your friends are loyal to you. They're not going to backstab you or anything like that. You want it in your family. You think of, like, the Godfather. Never tell anyone outside the family what you're thinking. Well, the underlying message there is, you know, we're loyal to each other. We've got each other's backs. And deep down, look, we hope our employers are loyal to us. You put in the effort to do the work, and you always hope that level of commitment is reciprocated to you with loyalty to keep you on the job. So loyalty can be a great thing. But that, to me, that's from an individual point of view. When you're talking about from a top-down look, from an organization, and living in the environment that is built on competition, loyalty comes with certain prerequisites in that manner. Most importantly, is loyalty mutually beneficial for all parties? And I look at it right now with the Vancouver Canucks. Their flaw is loyalty. And again, loyalty can be good, but if you're not utilizing it correctly, it can just as quickly become the poison instead of the antidote. These trade whispers have mysteriously gone quiet around Tanner Pearson. And as it trends closer and closer to, you know, him re-signing back in Vancouver, outside of the hockey component of who the player is on the ice, why do this? Like, what is the prime motivation of this? And this is Patrick Johnson last night on the People's Show, just talking about, you know, the Tanner Pearson potential of re-signing him. Oh, okay. We'll get to that in just a second. essentially. And you know, when you go back to what this has all been about, you know, Jim Benning's talked about it in the past too as well. Yeah, he's a good player, but essentially the best part of Tanner Pearson, or one of the benefits of having Tanner Pearson around, is, hey, he's good in the room. He's a player that you can have around to be your leader among other players, to show the young players what to do. And we've heard that echoed many times when it comes to other players that the organization has brought in. And I think about the elements of why they make these moves, and it just feels like there's a recurring angle to it. Here's Patrick Johnson again from last night.
I think part of this dynamic is, you know, that Tanner Pearson is a guy that is, I think, well-liked in that room. You know, I think we've heard enough about it that, you know, the loss of Tanev and Markstrom, we know it was felt in the room. We know that it was a bit of a blow to some of the people there. You know, I don't think the main reason is that this guy holds the room together, he's the glue or anything like that, but it certainly plays a factor in this. I think, you know, they like Tanner Pearson as a player. There's no doubt about that.
So they like him as a player, but certainly he might have like a little Big Lebowski. He's the guy that ties the room together. He's the rug that ties the room together. And see, Mac, you've mentioned this when it comes to a certain price with him. Will I change my tune? But it's really not about Tanner Pearson. He can come in on a cheap deal, and sure, whatever, that's fine. If it's $3 million, if it's sub $3 million, like in a vacuum, that's a fine move. But it strikes me as another move to keep calm waters. Like, hey, he's good in the room. It's too difficult to find a replacement. Let's keep the status quo. And that's fine and dandy, but status quo of the status quo in Vancouver has been barely making the playoffs last year, and generally speaking, missing the playoffs. Is loyalty really what this franchise needs right now?
Well, I guess it's your definition of loyalty. I look at it more as certainty, but I get it. You can't just have guys who are great in the room, because a lot of guys who are great in the room are older and can't necessarily play anymore, but they have all the experience. So you need a mix, and obviously not every hockey team gets along with each other. Not every hockey team has this bond that'll take them to certain heights, and some teams win when the room isn't necessarily all on the same page. But I tend to think in Pearson's case, like, loyalty to me is a guy going out and you're like, okay, you can't play anymore, but we're going to give you a scouting job because you've been great to the franchise, and we're going to keep you around because you've just meant so much being a Canuck. That, sure, to me is loyalty. This, in Pearson's case, in my estimation, is more certainty. They know what he is. They know what he's capable of doing. And they know what they get night in, night out, in a world where we don't know how someone's going to adapt going to a new team in this COVID situation. Because as we've heard from certain players, you know, Dixon Ward was on last week and you were off, but he talked about when you get traded to a team, you go hang out, you become buds, you go for beer. You can't all do that. So when you bring new people now into your fold in this world that we're living in, and we don't know if it's going to be any different come the fall when hockey starts up next year, certainty is important. Cost certainty, certainty of what the player is able to do, and I guess a certainty in the room that you know that he's good in it and he can teach the Canuck way, let's call it that way, or you know, I love that cliche when they, oh, we play Canucks hockey, or, you know, I never quite understood that one, but bottom line,
29 other teams aren't playing hockey either. They're playing their own
exactly,
brand.
Exactly, but at the same token, this is where I look at him more as certainty as to loyalty, because in my opinion, loyalty would be extending Roussel or Beagle in a year or two because, oh, they were just such great guys. And all. In Pearson's case, I think this guy can still play. I know he can still play. He can play the right way for you. He can slide down into that middle six as opposed to always being in the top six, and is a valuable piece at the certain price you can get him at.
Here was Jim Benning when he met with media at the beginning of March. Just talking about, you know, because it's been a long timeline here, because he did announce that they wanted to talk to him some time ago. But here's essentially what he said about Tanner Pearson way back when, at the early of March.
Since we traded for him, him and Bo have been real good together. He's a real pro. Like, he leads by example. He plays the right way. He's strong on the walls. He gets to the front of the net. But the way he handles himself on a day-to-day basis is a guy that you know, we want our younger players around. And we're going to sit down with his agent, Joe Riznik, and just see if there's some common ground that we can get to and that makes sense for him and for us. And we're going to try to re-sign him.
So there you go. He and Bo are good together, leads by example, and the way he handles himself on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, like he mentioned, playing on the wall and all that sort of stuff. But you want to look at motivations of why this is. Again, I go back to loyalty. Do you want to talk about certainty? Look, if you want to be certain about certain things, I can be certain about the tenure of Jim Benning and the results that have played out here over the course of 7 years. I can develop some certainty in that. And I look at this, and again, this is once again motivated by loyalty. And that's great, but in a competitive environment, man, it better be helpful to both parties. And if this contract comes in at a certain price, okay, that's great. But I look at maintaining the same thing, and the achievements have not been good enough to bring in the same group back. And that's my fear in all this, running it back for the sake of being loyal. And when you really have no cause for being this loyal.
Well, on the Dunbar Lumber text line, Raj texts in, loyalty in sports is flawed. Some of the best GMs and managers are ruthless when it comes to evaluating players. Look at what did, who would cut a player before they declined. Same with Belichick. Good managers are about team success, not personal agendas or loyalty to certain people. It's loyalty to the brand and team. Totally agree with you. I mean, Wally Buono gets rid of a Jason Claremont, if we say, like, and everyone's, why are you getting rid of Jason Claremont? He's a really good player. Belichick, same, can look through it and maybe predict the future. And obviously the NFL is a little easier to get rid of players. But in this case, I still think Tanner Pearson can play. I don't know that this is time to cut bait on Pearson. I realize that you've seen some players, we had that yesterday on the inbox, that they were talking about, you know, the Perrys of the world or some of these veterans that have looked really good in new surroundings and have come in at cheaper prices. And yeah, you might be able to get away with that. But this to me, again, is just more of who Tanner Pearson is and how he fits at the moment, and that they honestly, truly believe there's more to give when it comes to him as a player.
650-650 on the text message inbox. I'm not sure if this is a don't at me already, but it says, Bick is possessed. Maybe that's a don't at me. A little early on it, but you can send in your don't at me's right now, 650-650. We'll get into it in a couple of minutes here. But also this one, I wouldn't mind Pearson as a bottom six player. I think the reason they want to keep him is they realize how much Tanev and Markstrom leaving affected the team. So that's probably one of the main reasons why they wanted to sign them. Here's the thing. You can't go back and correct that. You can't go back and say, like, boy, we really missed that level of leadership. Really hope Tanner Pearson replaces it. No, you've missed that boat. Now it's about creating that environment again. And if you're talking about replacing voices to the level of Tanev and Markstrom, is someone like Tanner Pearson that? No. So it's about building that back up internally. That's the remedy here.
For sure. It 100% right. And again, they have to make the determination, is Tanner Pearson that fit? That thing we know, that again, I'll go back to the word certainty, that we're certain we're going to get A, B, C, and D, and if we can get them at this cost, then that's where we want to go. All this is, again, predicated by the dollars and cents. Can they get him at a deal that makes sense for them? Is Pearson worried about the market, a flat cap, uprooting his family during COVID? Could be super comfortable here and willing to take a little bit less than more. But my suspicion at the part of his career is you want to start to get paid at this point too. So this may all be moot, and you know he could be a guy we see moved on Monday.
Unsigned text here, 650-650. None of what you were talking about, Pearson, matters at all unless you can get him for $2 million or less. If not, who cares? And move on. $2 million seems like, even by my estimations, quite the pay cut. I don't see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And to be honest, I'm not even sure if I even see less than three, but we'll live in that reality should it come to fruition in that scenario. But keep your texts coming in, 650-650, because it is 120, and we do this every day here on Canuck Central with Bick and the Boss. It is Don't At Me.
Your takes uninterrupted. Don't At Me. Text in your submissions to 650-650.
Don't at me. I said what I said.
Don't At Me for Lease Busters. Need or want out of your car lease? Avoid early termination and negative equity costs by going to leasebusters.com. Guaranteed lease relief. It's really simple. You got a statement. You want to say it. It's kind of a safe space here. We won't try to argue too much about it. It's don't at me. And my don't at me, Jim Benning is too loyal. Don't at me.
Yes. Yes, he is loyal. And to your point earlier, you said you hope your company, your boss, your organization is loyal to you when you've done a good job. I'm very aware of who I said it to. You're going to reward it. Yeah, that was a good point. A great point by you. And yeah, I guess loyalty is something that plays into Jim Benning's decisions. But he also has to make the right call. And that's the tough job of being a GM in the National Hockey League.
I even think back to something like the Erik Gudbranson trade, right? Or the re-signing. It's, well, we couldn't get rid of him. Let's just retain him for the here and now, and maybe we can do it later, right? That was a stance of loyalty in that scenario of, hey, we've backed ourselves into a corner. Let's just try to do this, and we'll see if we can remedy it down the road. I feel a similar scenario developing when it comes to this potential transaction. 650-650 into the text message inbox. Don't at me, pro password is going to make a comeback. All right, here comes the password truthers into the text message inbox. Kyle from the island, don't at me. Minnesota Wild win the Stanley Cup. How about that last night? Eight, dropping an eight bomb on the Colorado Avalanche.
I still don't think they're winning the cup. I know it's a safe space and we're not supposed to do that, but I'm not buying that one.
I will say I'm impressed. Kaprizov, man, that's a fun player to watch. Just, you know, Minnesota's always needed that oomph type of player, right? They need a little bit more, right? They had Gabrick, but they're so boring, and they had like mini stretches here, but now they get Fiala, they get Kaprizov. I know the winds are changing in Minnesota. Imagine if the Minnesota Wild become a offensive team.
Yeah. Hey, it's going to be really tough for anyone to win it this year. And as we've seen in the past, teams can come from out of the picture and into the picture. I just don't think that they're at the top of the group that's going to challenge for that Stanley Cup.
Don't at me. The players that have endorsements with various car dealerships have all been very underwhelming this season. That's Brandon and Coquillum. Ian and Victoria, the game is played on the ice, not in the room. Don't at him.
I like that
one. He gets it.
I totally agree. And there are players that will tell you that, you know, one time they had a say in the room, and then as they got older in their careers and couldn't do it on the ice, you still have a presence, but you don't have that full autonomy or ability to speak up when you can't produce on the ice. So yeah, bang on with Ian.
JCast, good call on the loyalty. I'm guessing it's why Louis Erickson hasn't and won't be sent to Utica. That's 650-650.
Louis Erickson. We're going to see more of Louis Erickson. Don't at me.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That's a don't at me. 650-650. Keep yours coming in. We'll get to a couple more on the other side with a little don't at me overtime. Keep those texts coming in. But a couple of trades over the last 24 hours in the NHL. We'll touch on one of them with Molly Walker from the New York Post. The Islanders making their move, sending a first-round pick to pick up Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. We'll talk about it on the other side. And with these moves, are the Islanders losing that sneaky team label? Because they've been talked about as exactly that. But you make the big move of the trade season, suddenly all eyes are going to be on you. We'll get into that and talk to Molly Walker coming up here on Canucks Central on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Here's more Canucks Central with Bick and the Boss on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome back to Bick and the Boss, Canucks Central. Here on Sportsnet 650, Canucks Central brought to you by Avenue Machinery. Give yourself the Avenue advantage and start the season by saving thousands on Kubota skid steers and excavators. Avenue Machinery. Use the internet to find them. I heard Dan Riccio's promo for the People Show coming up there. I feel like he set up what's the flower at Augusta? Is it Unipers?
Magnolias?
Magnolia, yeah, I suppose, yeah. too. I feel like he's got a bunch of those just around him. He's just, like, really embracing the imagery of Augusta, just trying to build it out at home.
Yeah, theater to the mind. It was
the Azaleas. Thank you.
The Azaleas. Yeah, it was kind of one of those things where yesterday we ripped him a little bit for maybe not doing that in the promo, but like a good loyal foot soldier in the employee ranks of Sportsnet 650, he took that idea and he ran with it. And it was a nice read. Although Greg Ballack is really upset that that idea was scooped. Although Greg, you know, imitation is the most sincerest form of flattery.
And Dan gets all his best ideas ripped off from me. Everyone knows that already, right?
Facts.
He didn't get password from me, though. I'll say that.
No. If you want to chime in on the password, should it stay or should it go, at Sportsnet 650 and jump in onto the poll question there. More reaction coming in. Dawn in the text message inbox. Don't at me. Sad has to stop acting like a know-it-all diva when he doesn't get his way with canceling password. I like how Sad's taking all the heat. Meanwhile, I'm also one of the driving forces behind this. But yeah, keep adding Sat when it comes to password. Don't at me, JFID. Put Coles in. We'll replace Pearson next year. Let Pearson test the waters and let him circle back when he realizes third liners don't get paid in a flat cap. JFID gets it. And unsigned text. I disagree. Look at Calgary. Problem is the room. Here's the problem with Calgary. They've been exceedingly loyal to a bunch of guys. It was over in Calgary. How long have we been talking about Johnny and Monty might not be playoff guys? A while. And here they are still running it back. Is that the future you want?
But that's not the future the Canucks are spewing or putting out here.
Yeah, hey, you keep making these signings. I'll keep pointing at loyalty.
All right, fair enough. If they re-up with Louis Erickson, then there's some loyalty.
Still some more pro password people texting in 650. This isn't password time. Go vote. You probably already voted, and the yes votes might be capped out now. It's struggling.
They realize when you go on the Dunbar Lumber text line that they can get to the boss right now. So they're kind of putting all this out there.
You have no power here on the password. Come on.
I have no power at the station. Who are you kidding? Like, no. let's be honest here. I'm just a puppet.
I wasn't going to go there.
I'm just a puppet. You know, this is a paper line. But yeah, I believe they're just putting this in here because they know that I'm going to read it and then maybe drop the hammer and say, no, we've got to bring it back. We've got to resurrect it. We have to bring it back. But
that's
not going to happen.
It's pretty clever by our listeners' part. I've always said very, very smart listeners. So that's very mischievous and clever on their parts to come after you to try to solve this. Vic Nazar and Craig McEwen here on Canuck Central with Bick and the Boss. So we touched on it a bit late at the end of the break there. Big trade yesterday. Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac end up in Long Island. And I see the Lou Lamorello rules are still in effect with having to shave off the beards and everything. But are they losing that label of sneaky team to you, C-Mac?
Yeah, they are. They showed last year they were a good, solid hockey team, great coaching staff, you know, some good young talent. And by adding these players, it just shows that Lou feels they're closer than maybe some people thought they were. But we obviously, this year, seeing a lot of hockey in the north and possibly not paying that much attention down south. But just watch a few of those Matt Barzal goals, local kid, and how well he's playing. And just these additions are one of those ones where you look and what pieces are you missing? What do you need to go on a run? And Lou knows better than most about those moves that have to be made. And these moves, or this move, I should say, with these two players, addresses what the Islanders feel they were missing.
Well, let's welcome in Molly Walker from the New York Post joining us here. She covers the Isles and the Rangers as well. Molly, thanks a lot for giving us some time here today. So I'm curious, because we look at this division, it's got Ovechkin, it's got Crosby, it's got Pasternak, right? So many star-level players. And the Islanders have always been this, you know, plucky team that wins games and, you know, are tough to break down. And then here they are dropping first-round picks in a pandemic trade deadline era. And to me, it kind of puts the spotlight on them. Are they losing that label of being the underdog team coming up in the next couple of weeks here?
Well, first of all, thank you guys so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. But as far as losing that label, honestly, if you look around and you see the kind of commentary that the Islanders get, a lot of people think that they play boring hockey. And I think that by itself kind of gives them that underdog mantra going for them. But as we've seen, boring hockey, it wins hockey games. You know, they're at the top of the East with the Capitals right there, and they just beat the Capitals twice. So in my book, they are at the top of the East right now. So I don't think that they think they're the underdogs, but I think that they do know that they are probably one of the most disrespected teams in the tri-state area. So I think that by itself kind of fuels them a little bit.
Last year, you know, Tampa Bay makes some moves, picking up Coleman and Gaudreau and just things they needed to do. So is this something that the Islanders needed to do and fit into their plans, that these are the pieces that they were missing to go on that magical run for the Cup?
100%. I think that when Anders Lee went down with a season-ending ACL injury, Lou Lamoriello said it himself. He assured that there was going to be moves at the deadline to be able to fill that void. And now you don't fill an Anders Lee void. You just can't, especially because of his leadership abilities. He's their captain. He has that strong net front presence that is just his office. And these two players don't really have that. But that being said, they are offensive weapons, and they are seasoned veteran players as well. They bring 26 seasons of NHL experience combined, and that's exactly what this Islanders team needs. They have an abundance of experience by itself. They've got a little bit of youth trickled in there, and I think that they needed to make moves to bring a little bit more offense, to go a little bit deeper. And especially if they have another injury, this gives them just a little bit more depth that they need to be able to carry on going into the playoffs here.
We obviously keep a close eye on a player like Matt Barzal here. He's from the Coquitlam area. And, you know, for us, we're always proud of the BC players having success. And he's putting up some highlights, all that sort of stuff. But I guess my question is this the type of environment or team where star-level players can get the recognition? Is there space for another Matt Barzal type player in the Islanders to get in there and, you know, have success offensively? Or is it our way and you'll try to have success by how we play?
I think that it's definitely the latter of that. This Islanders team relies on their team identity. That is who they are. And honestly, obviously you guys think that Matt Barzal is the star of the team, but if you ask around the league who the star of the New York Islanders are, they'll probably tell you Barry Trotz and Lou Lamoriello, which I agree with 110%. It is their way of leading this group, and the culture that they have instilled on this team is just, it's next to none. The way that they view how they play, the way that they attack every game, it's a real culture and a real identity that they have going over there. And you really can't say the same. You really can't say the same thing about every team in the league. Honestly, I cover the Rangers as well, and I think that team in particular is still trying to find their identity and who they are. But if you look at the Islanders, they are so comfortable in who they are and what they can do and relying on their systems. That's why I think they probably think it's hilarious when people say that they play boring hockey, because if you look at the stats and if you look at the numbers, they're leading the East, I think the NHL, in shutout wins right now. They have 6 shutouts to their name, and that is a testament to the kind of hockey that they play, the lockdown defense, the hard-nosed, gritty kind of play, and that's just, they embrace that. They really just have bought into this culture that Barry and Lou brought to Long Island.
And was it a hard sell, do you think, for the players, in the sense of playing that hard-nosed, gritty, in-your-face hockey in the playoffs is one thing, but to do that during the regular season and kind of build towards it, I know how good a coach Barry is, but was it a hard sell, do you think, to get these players to think that way and gain that identity and work towards it? Or is it the case of we see some results and that does the selling for us?
Definitely not. I think that it was probably the easiest sell ever. And if you listen to Palmieri and Zajac on their first conference call as Islander players, they both talked about just how much they admire the Islanders as a team and an organization, and playing against them in the East for as long as they both have, the respect that they have for the way that they play and the way that they attack each game is really just self-explanatory. I know Zajac waived his new no movement clause in order to make this deal happen. And he said it himself. He felt like it was ready and like he was ready. And that at this point in his career, he's been around the block for a couple of years now, and he was ready to get onto a winning hockey team. And when the opportunity arose, the Islanders were right there. And I don't think it was a hard sell at all. I think that they really believe in what Larry and Barry have, Lou and Barry have going on over there. And it was definitely an easy choice. And Palmieri said the same thing. He said that it was, he was excited and was anxious waiting for the call. And then once it came in, he was just stoked.
Molly Walker joining us from the New York Post, talking about the New York Islanders. I'm curious, does a trade like this, and perhaps the such as the standards that the Islanders set, but does a trade like this raise the expectations of what they have to accomplish in the playoffs?
Definitely. I think that this kind of move, I think a lot of people were expecting Palmieri to come to the Islanders. He was kind of just like a known good fit. And I know Lou talked about it last night. He said that he's known Palmieri since he was in high school playing hockey in New Jersey. And then with Zajac, he obviously drafted Zajac with the Devils. So, but I think a lot of people figured that Kyle Palmieri would be getting sent to the Islanders. But I think Travis Zajac was a little bit of a surprise. And I think the fact that Lou was able to pull both on board, that was Lou basically making a declaration that this team is all in for a Stanley Cup run. That they, I mean, they have been a win now team for a couple years now, but their window is really approaching from this year, next year, two years from now. This is their window, and they're ready to make a push. And I think that these two acquisitions really prove that they're gearing up. You know, they are looking, they have more than enough depth, depth than they need to go forward here.
Do you get a sense that there'll be more teams looking to go all in on the deadline this year, or because of the COVID situation, you know, some quarantine issues, maybe trading between Canada and the United States, some of the hurdles that they have to come over, that this will be a quieter trade deadline, and that those teams looking to go all in are not going to be plentiful?
I definitely think that the circumstances of this season will make for a more quiet deadline this season, like you mentioned, because of the quarantine protocols and things like that. It will be a lot more difficult, but if you look at the Islanders in particular, this worked because not only are they local guys, so they were able to be on the ice with the team today, and they will be playing with the team tonight. So they were able to kind of get around that because of the local aspect. And that's not the case for everybody. So I don't think that it's going to be a pretty active trade deadline, if I do say so. But if this Islanders trade worked out too, because both Palmieri and Zajac are unrestricted free agents this summer. So obviously every team is dealing with the cap crunch. And now that these two guys are here, they really are true rentals. And that if it does work out and it is a nice match, then Lamoriello will be able to re-sign them if he wants to a deal that will make sense for the Islanders' current cap situation.
Molly Walker from the New York Post joining us. We got a listener question, Molly, and you do cover the Rangers as well. They want to know about Adam Fox, and obviously he's having a Norris-level season. He's kind of becoming the tail of a really exciting New York team. Obviously, Benajad's there, and Panarin, and obviously, you know, Lafreniere's there. But you know, Adam Fox is really starting to stand out.
I'll tell you, I wrote a feature about Adam Fox a couple of weeks ago, and I spoke to his first coach ever, who started coaching him when he was just 4 years old. And he told me that Adam Fox moves the puck with the same poise and grace now at 22, 23 years old than he did when he was 4 years old. And I believe it. I really do believe that he has just brought this calmness and poise about him that is very rare in a young defenseman. And you see it on the ice and the way that he moves and just his confidence out there. He knows what he can do with the puck, and he knows that how to stay calm. And it's very rare. And it's really been a pleasure to watch. He's definitely having a Norris candidate kind of season. I'm not sure if it'll be this season, but if he can build upon this season and continue putting up the numbers that he has in the next year or so, then he definitely should be able to get one very, very quickly.
The Florida Panthers free up some cap space with a move with the Blackhawks, and you have to expect that they're going to be looking to make a deal, especially on the back end, to help them in their push. Do you have a sense of, you know, how things are shaping up in the rest of the National Hockey League, and when it comes to a team like the Panthers or some of the D that are out there that possibly could move and trade places before the deadline comes?
You know, I think it's a very complicated situation. Like I was saying earlier with the cap crunch, it's so hard to make assumptions and to start picking and placing where players could go because of how unique this season is with the financial situations of each team and such. So I really couldn't say, but it's definitely a very unusual situation that a lot of these general managers have to navigate this season. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the cap is affected going forward here.
She is Molly Walker from the New York Post. Certainly jump online onto Twitter and follow her as well. Molly, thanks a lot for giving some time here today, and say hi to Adnan for us. He's going to be on our station later. I know you're jumping on NHL Network in a bit too.
Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
That's Molly Walker from the New York Post covering the Isles and the Rangers. Some pretty interesting stuff there when it comes to the Islanders. And look, the playoffs in that Eastern Division are going to be really, really fun because you got the Capitals, you got the Islanders, the Penguins, Bruins, and like the Rangers, they're behind a bit. They're 5 points back of the Bruins, but secretly, like, they've had a really strong season. They're plus 22 in the goal differential, and you start looking at that team, there's still some holes. They're still working their way through that rebuild when they were very honest with their fans, very transparent. But, like, whichever four teams make it in, and it'll likely be the Bruins, Penguins, Islanders, and Capitals, but that, to me, is the division that I want to watch come playoff time.
Yeah, the experience of some of those teams, the up-and-coming Islanders making these moves, obviously Lamoriello feels that his hockey club is really close, or he wouldn't go to this great length of acquiring two veteran players, obviously on expiring contracts, which is important and helps the Islanders in the short term, and bringing in some people that he feels will fit, can fill a need, and probably push them over the top. But what's hard about the Islanders is how they play, and Molly mentioned it there, that identity and that hard nose, gritty, tough to get chances. You know, Trotz has done a great job in creating that and working with a system that works well come playoff time. And so those other teams that are going to go up against them are going to have some real issues and some problems in breaking them down. Not to say they can't, but in order to do so and to climb past them, it isn't going to be easy sledding. And in the playoffs, sometimes that's the difference between winning and losing a series, is that you're just so darn hard to play against that ultimately the other team is like, oh, we can't handle this anymore. Every time we go out there, this is such a grind. We don't know if we can put in the work or the energy or the effort to get through it, especially considering all the other things that are going on in the world right now, both mentally and physically.
Identities, like I've said it 100 times on the station. Identity is the most important thing for a team to figure out. And generally speaking, in the course of a season, I think the first 20 games are just kind of start crafting that out, identity out. And we're talking about an 82-game season. The first 20 games, you figure out what kind of what works. The next 40 are, you know, honing in on the identity. And the last 20 are, okay, now we work out the chemistry and smooth everything out to the final bit. And then you hit the playoffs running. the Islanders know exactly who they are. And, yeah, you know, just kind of going back to what we were talking about with Vancouver, it's, I guess deep down, that's also what frightens me a bit, is we thought for a minute this team carved out an identity last year, but truth be told, they didn't really. And now here they are trying to run it back. And that's where my concern lies. It's doing the same thing over again when you haven't done the most important part first. It's figure out who you are and figure out what your identity is. And they're trying to bring back the same people to say, hey, we can figure it out with our group of people. Well, you know what? Maybe you were wrong. And maybe the idea of just keep running it back is what's going to send you further into the abyss.
Yeah, and the identity of this hockey team here is, you know, your top group of stars are really good. You have a high-end defenseman. You now seem to have a emerging and very solid netminder. But outside of those pieces, to win in the National Hockey League, you have to be more than just offensive. You love to see heavy teams, big teams, tough to play against. Are the Canucks that? No. Can they become that? Well, it's difficult, especially when you have the money they do tied up in some bottom six players. That's where the identity, to me, needs to be fixed, because the top end or high end stuff is great. Not everyone can have a Pettersson or a Hughes or a Besser or even a Horvat, for that matter. They have that part of the identity quotient, but the rest of it, what is their style? How are they going to play? Travis Green has done a good job, I believe, you know, after a rough start of creating some stuff where they're allowing more shots from the outside again, taking away those second and third chances. So that is a bit more of their identity in the playoffs. They were tough to play against. They worked hard. They did give up a lot of shots. But bottom line is, you're right, they need to find who they are and what they are. And in the case of the Islanders, last year they found it. They still continue to do it. And that's a tribute to that organization in putting that in place, so that they know night in, night out what to expect and how they're expected to play.
Bick Nizar and Craig McEwen here with Bick and the Boss on Canucks Central. Big trade, obviously, with the New York Islanders, getting Kyle Palmieri and Travis Zajac. And then the Panthers free up a little bit of move, sending out Brett Connolly and Henrik Borgstrom to the Chicago Blackhawks. We'll get into more of it, plus more Canucks talk with Cam Cole coming up in just a bit. NHL trade deadline coverage brought to you by Andrew Sherritt Limited, your local family employee-owned wholesale distributor with locations across Western Canada. Purchase heating, plumbing, and irrigation supplies online at Sherritt.com. Cam Cole on the way with Bick and the Boss here on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.